This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name is Chris Scott and I'm here with Tom Birchfield. How are you, Tom?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty good, as my old dad says, but bunch of fluffy ducks.
Yeah.
Do you know that saying?
I kind of do. I have a lot of New Zealand family.
Yeah.
And I've heard this phrase, box of fluffies. I'm not sure what it means. Anyway, jug of spates and a box of fluffies, I've heard people talk about. I guess it kind of comes from that part of the world.
I talk about it now. I've started using it as a colloquial term. And people just look at me like I'm absolutely off my rock. But I'm sure people used it. It must have been in New Zealand where I've grown up. And it's sort of come from that, really. Box of fluffies.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Anyway, you're the head of marketing intelligence here at LiveX.
Yeah.
And you look at the monthly information and part of your team's role is to produce reports on what's going on in the market. But what I want to really look at this time is the market has changed fundamentally. We alluded to it last week in that when I first joined the wine trade about 25 years ago, I remember used to get guys who would be buying on premiere. They'd buy two cases of something, hold one case and drink it, and then they'd hold the other and sell it, and then they'd use that money to buy the next two cases. And they were basically drinking quite well for almost no money down. That's not really the case now, is it?
No. I mean, particularly if we're focusing on Bordeaux en Primeur, the fact of the matter is that since 2016 as a collector, for each vintage since then, on average, you are out of pocket. So for 2017 down to 2023, that a central contract, which Bordeaux en Primeur used to be, which is, as a producer, I will sell you this wine at the cheapest it's ever going to be in the market. And as a consumer, in return for that, for taking the risk, because the wine's still in the barrel, I will give you working capital. And that contract has kind of disappeared. We are currently in the middle of the 2024 campaign, which we had really hoped. There was a lot of goodwill in the market from merchants right the way through the supply chain. This could be the opportunity to sort of instill a bit of vigor, not just into the Bordeaux market, but, you know, the Bordeaux market is the biggest of the fine wine markets, makes up about 35% of the overall market. There'd been a real hope that this campaign had been an opportunity to reset, sort of add the vigor back into the market, get consumers on board, get them excited to be able to buy Bordeaux. And the reports that we are hearing is that, unfortunately, the campaign is not really playing out like that. There have been a few successes. For example, Lafite, I think they released the 24 at about 30% discount to any other vintage back to 2008, any other sort of recent vintage on the market. That's a pretty enticing proposition as a collector. But unfortunately, there haven't been as many of those sort of what we would think of as a sort of a no-brainer as we had expected. And even those ones haven't flown as, I guess, the market really hoped they would. It seems that buyer's apathy has sort of taken hold.
But also, there's been a few years of down. And if you're starting to predict negative pricing and you're expecting it, it becomes hard to jump in without a really compelling.
Yeah.
Before we get into what's happening now, let's just step back a little bit. We were talking before we started this interview and I was saying, you know, I sort of think of Bordeaux and the prices in the fine wine market are really, it's set by supply and demand. Mm-hmm. When you go to the supermarket or a wine shop and you spend £10 on a bottle of wine, a big thing that sets that price is price quality. You pay more for a better quality wine, typically, not always, but, you know, hopefully that's what you're trying to do. But when you start getting over about 50 quid a bottle, it's really what's driving that is demand and supply. And the price starts to disconnect from the underlying quality in the bottle.
Yeah.
And therefore, what's driving it is supply and demand. And you mentioned 2016. My first remembrance of what was coming was when we started seeing China coming into the market and purchasing a lot of wine. And we saw the prices of the fine wine market go through the roof. What was going on then? And when did that happen?
Well, I think it sort of peaked in 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. And I think an interesting sort of way of looking at this is every Emprimeur campaign, once dust is settled, we speak to 20 of the biggest fine wine merchants in the UK, which is the biggest Emprimeur buying country in the world. And 2009, 2010, Emprimeur sales were at about £240 million, give or take.
In the UK?
In the UK. Last year, they were probably about £60 million. So I think that kind of pretty fair indictment of how things have gone. But yeah, you saw a huge amount of Chinese money come into the market in 2009, 2010. It looked...
And nine and 10 were good years.
They were good. They were in some instances, you know, they were really great. But I think from 2008, 2009, 2010, some producers, you know, like tripled the prices, which I guess in hindsight wasn't the best decision for sort of long-term sustained growth. You know, the Chinese market withdrew and prices have tumbled. Some of those 2009, 2010 for the, you know, for the blue chip wines, the prices are still actually below where they were back then, which is, that's not what you expect. You know, the traditional characteristics of fine wine is the longer you go, the better it gets, the more of it that gets drunk. Therefore, demand supply balance, you know, has this supposedly kind of unique proposition. If you price it at an unsustainable price, you know, all of the rest of that kind of falls by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think, you know, since 2009, 2010, Chinese market has withdrawn. I think where we are today, sort of moving forward to post-COVID, or no, we should touch on COVID.
Let's go from 2010 to COVID.
Yeah.
That's almost 10 years there. What happened in those years?
To be honest, it was more of a period of, you know, sustained growth. 2013 was probably the low point. It was a terrible year in Bordeaux, and it was sort of considered sort of the low point of the market. Since then, the wines were released at sort of really low prices. And if you look at the price appreciation of those 2013s, now you could actually have made a little bit of money. Since then, prices sort of ticked up and up and up and up and up.
Even though the Chinese were stepping back from the market. So yeah. Who was supplying the demand?
Well, that's a really good question. It looks like there's essentially not enough demand. And I think if we're sort of reading between the lines, we're talking about a big stock overhang caused by a big demand supply imbalance. You've got a Chinese market which hasn't returned post-COVID, a Chinese market that hasn't returned as would perhaps need to be. There is also the question around, you know, your typical Emprimeur buyer. You could sort of be more glib than this, but in many instances, they're of the age where they actually have enough wine to see them through. You know, they're probably in their 50s, and we're talking about wines which the very best of them need, what, 20, 30 years to be in their prime. So potentially they're falling back. The younger generation, for health reasons, for whatever reason, they haven't sort of taken up the slack. And yeah, I guess the supply keeps coming every year.
Oh, yes.
What we think's happening is that it's sitting in warehouses, essentially. And who's paying for that? Either it's producers who are holding onto the stock. Library releases are kind of a way that they sort of deal with that. Mm-hmm. They drip feed the market with wine, and then, you know, Palmer does a 10-year release. Latour remove themselves entirely from the Emprimeur market. It's kind of an experiment that everyone's watching on. But fundamentally, the wine is sitting in warehouses. The cost of money has increased. And as wines are coming out, they're actually depreciating. So you're sort of holding on to a depreciating asset at increased costs.
The people who are holding on to it, from my understanding, is both, as you're saying, the chateaus who decided to do, instead of releasing all their wines, they're releasing partial amount of their wines into Emprimeur. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying, releasing it later on. Because let's face it, if the wine comes from the chateau, that's the golden level of providence, isn't it? That those wines will always have a slight premium over whatever's in the market.
It's an interesting one. There definitely is that argument. Another argument would be, as soon as the wine leaves the chateau, then that perfect providence premium can also be removed, sort of depending on and when you, how far after the vintage you remove it. So I think there is potentially a really strong sort of marketing tale potentially to say.
The other people I understand that's got large amounts of stock in negociants, because in Bordeaux, you don't go to Chateau Margaux and say, oh, I'll have a couple of cases. You go to a middleman who's purchased the wine or committed to purchasing the wine. Hopefully they've sold it before they've purchased it, but they have minimum allocations they really need to take, or else they lose access to the wine. So some of these negotiants are having to purchase wines, even if they haven't got anybody to buy it, because they want to be players in the market. And if they stop doing it, someone else might come in and take their allocations.
I think historically that has been true. 100%, that's the way it's always operated. And you're right, as negociant, you kind of are duty bound to take your allocation, come what may, because you won't get it in the next year, and you put it into storage and you hopefully sell it straight through. What's happened in recent years is that storage or that stock has piled up. And now we're hearing reports that, you know, even negociants are sort of turning back their allocations in instances now. They're not feeling so duty bound to take it because it's just an expense they don't want to take.
And the thing about it is that since the 2008 financial crisis, interest rates were really super low. So if you were borrowing money to hold stock, it wasn't super expensive. But since COVID, the cost of money has become substantially more expensive. So the cost of holding onto that stock now becomes a much larger liability.
You know, if you were to simplify what happened during COVID, when there was a bull run basically from mid to late 2020 until end of 2022, cost of money was low. Huge amount of speculation came into the market.
What was that? Because people were bored at home?
Yeah, I think so. People were drinking more fine wine. That was a major driver of it.
Certainly all the stuff. I used to keep wine, not fancy fine wine bottles, I used to age wine just to see what was happening. And I, you know, just part of just your general wine education is like, I like this wine. Let's see what it's like in 10 years time. And during COVID, I drank it all.
Yeah. I'm sure you weren't alone. But I think one other thing to add into this is that the cost of storing wine has increased. Now it's about 15 quid a case for a year. So the cost of just having an asset sitting there in a warehouse somewhere depreciating in value is quite a hard sell. Like returning to one primo, which, you know, if you're going to keep it for 20 years, that gets pretty expensive.
Yeah. Okay. So up to about COVID, we saw the Chinese moving out of the market, the wine not being purchased by Chinese, Gen Z, whoever. The wines that weren't being sold were just being stored. So we're seeing increasing levels of storage. And then you mentioned during COVID, we had a bull market. Everything went up. I mean, you look at the share prices of almost anybody and they just went silly during that period, not just fine wine. And now since 2002 to now, we've had an adjustment, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, the headline figure, the market is off as a whole about 25%. It's been a pretty slow grind down, it's at just under 1% on average each month. Champagne and Burgundy rose the furthest during the bull run and have fallen off the furthest since. Bordeaux didn't experience such a big rise and has sort of, you know, been middling. The one region which, or one country which has sort of fared better than most since the downturn.
Can I guess? Is it Italy?
Correct. you must be reading our reports.
No, I haven't. But no. I have. Yeah. I follow the news. But
Yeah. It's Italy just continues to buck the trend. I don't think we're necessarily going to go into tariffs now, but from what we've seen and where I would be slightly sort of nervous about whether that trend will continue is that the US demand for, in particular, Tuscany appears to have supported the prices of Tuscan fine wine since the downturn. And if you remove the US, which is the biggest, well, last year was the biggest purchasing country, if you remove some of that, you dent some of that demand, then naturally you would expect that those Tuscan prices might fall.
Brunello di Montalcino used to be a massively popular wine in America. I presume it still is.
Yeah, Tuscany, but also Piedmont wines have strong demand in the US. You know, the Super Tuscans as well. You know, those ones which are at that price point, you know, like Tignanello and Sassicaia, which particularly Sassicaia probably that bang for buck compared to Bordeaux First Growths. You know, they represent decent value.
I mean, I've bought Sassicaia a few times. When I bought it, it wasn't crazy price. It was like £130 a bottle or something like that. I don't know what it's like now. But all right. So we've seen the boom of the prices. Why didn't people unload stock at that point? If the prices were high, why weren't the negotiants clearing out their warehouses as fast as they could?
I mean, I'm pretty sure they were.
Yeah.
But since they just haven't been able to. We're in a buyer's market now. I think it's pretty incredible, really. As a buyer, if you come into the market now, you can probably get an allocation of most wines that you want, some of the cheapest prices you're ever going to get them. So it's a tough market. But if you are a buyer, you know, there are some incredible opportunities out there.
Yeah. Where are we now with on-premier? Because we've seen demand change. We saw a spike because people were sitting around doing nothing and drinking lots of fine wines.
Yeah.
And then we've seen the prices just coming down. You said 25% from their peaks.
Yeah.
And we're now in the middle of an on-premier campaign for the 2024 wines,
yeah,
which was, by all accounts, one of the more dodgy vintages. I think they always like to talk, it's a heterogeneous vintage.
Yeah, heterogeneous vintage.
In other words, the good guys still make good wines.
Yeah.
And everybody else struggled.
You've hit the nail really on the head. From what we can see, is essentially if you have enough capital as a producer to kind of mitigate the vintage,
yeah,
then you can kind of get away with it. And I think what we're seeing in this campaign, but I think what we will continue to see is actually a stratification where the people at the very top who can firstly chuck enough money at potentially bad weather to produce a decent wine, but also have enough margin sort of built in. You know, if Lafite can come down 30%, I think we should probably get away from talking about release prices and how they are compared to the previous vintage. I think we should talk about how they are compared to all the other vintages on the market,
yeah,
where it puts it into the market. But Lafite can come down. It has the wiggle room to come down. And I'm not sure exactly what their financials are, but they'll be okay. If you are towards the bottom end of the price.
Well, you're like 50 quid, fifth growth.
30 quid. I mean, you had someone like Malartic. I mean, I have such massive sympathy for people like Malartic La Gravière. You know, they produced a good wine. They release it at, it's like 300 quid for a 12 pack. You have other wines which similar ratings release at about 8 times that price point, and the market is essentially saying that's where you've got to release it, and that's not even guaranteed to make it a sellout, like a smash out, a sort of a slam dunk.
Yeah,
it was an incredibly expensive vintage to produce. And the market is sort of saying, sorry, you can't add on the cost to consumers because the market won't suck it up.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. I think the Bordeaux market in the next couple of years is going to be tough. Sitting here in London, the weather so far for 25 looks like 25 might be a decent vintage. And I think that's going to be a real interesting one, because if 25 is a really, really great vintage, in the past, what would happen is the producers would go, okay, great. Now I can whack up the prices. The market is not going to be ready for that come 2025. I think what they're going to need to do is probably keep the prices maximum where they are for the 24s. Just rely on it being a cheaper vintage to produce. And that might be the new model that they work from. I think what we've seen over the past 10, 15 years, cost of production have massively ramped up. You know, here in Bordeaux, you see these incredible new wineries. All the investment that's gone into those, headcount costs have gone up. We've got, you know, like star winemakers being brought in, all these things. Costs have gone up massively. And I think sort of what the strategy has been is quality at all costs. And by the way, one of those ways of doing that is by reducing the amount of Grand Vin that you produce and sort of making sure that only the best goes into that. And you sort of increase the cost, increase what goes into the second and in some cases third wines. You increase your critic ratings, you do a bit of brand and marketing on the side, and you hope that that gives you sort of permission to increase your prices. And I think that strategy, by the looks of it, has for the most part failed. So I think there might need to be a change of tack. Fundamentally, if your end consumer from 2016 onwards is better off buying the wine today than they were when it was released, that needs to change. You need to go sort of back to basics.
Are we anywhere near what happened in the 1980s? I don't know if you remember what happened.
I wasn't alive until 1988.
Yeah, okay.
I know some of the facts.
Yeah. But my understanding, and I wasn't paying attention to the wine industry back then either. I was a young lad and didn't drink wine at all back then. I only got a beer when my dad wasn't looking. Was that they had a similar thing had happened. The prices got a little bit ahead of themselves. And then they just had a really bad string of bad vintages in a row. And they couldn't shift the product to reflect. And a lot of the chateaus went bust.
Mm-hmm.
And because they got to a for sale situation where they literally, even though the prices were going down, they had to sell to free up capital. And the same with the negotiants. There was a real big, you know, everything got thrown up in the air and it settled down to this new normal we saw in the 90s going forward. given that a lot of the negotiants are paying a lot of money for their wine, are you starting to see the point where negotiants are becoming distressed sellers, which will even put the next layer of pressure on prices?
I think 100%. Our analysis would show that negotiants are really in hot water. And fact of the matter is that further along the supply chain as well, merchants are in hot water. So I think it could be a tough few years ahead. I think fine wine in general is more sheltered than sort of towards the lower end of the scale. You hear these sort of vineyards being pulled, mm-hmm. pretty big extent in Bordeaux.
Yeah,
that's not affecting sort of the fine wine. That's not affecting the Grand Cru Classé just yet. I think towards the lower end of the scale, I think it is extremely tough. Sympathize a lot with these producers when the market is being able to buy the back vintages for cheaper. You know, it makes, to me, it makes perfect sense. If I can buy a similar quality wine for cheaper, it's more ready to drink. If I'm going to put my money anywhere, I'm going to buy that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a tough position to be in as a producer, but what's the alternative? Instead of hoping to increase your income, the alternative is to reduce your costs. So potentially that might be a direction that the Chateau go. Reducing the amount of wine that goes into the second wine, just increasing the Grand Van, potentially taking a hit on ratings, but whatever it can be to sort of price your wine lower. The thing we're talking about is there's a lack of demand from China, lack of demand from the older generation. The newer generation aren't coming through, and I think it's fundamentally a question about price. You need to be pricing your wines at a level at which the new generation can build up a love for them. It needs to be priced at a point that people are not afraid to open it. They can actually go, you know what? Aged Bordeaux is absolutely delicious. And at the moment, we're not quite there. And I think that's kind of what needs to happen.
All right, then. I think we're going to wrap it up there, Tom.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.